This episode of Unquasi Unfiltered is brought to you by MTN Zambia.
There's no us without you, so we say thank you.
This morning, I am so delighted to have in the house our sponsors, actually, but also from MTN. I have Pamela Pio, who's here to talk to us about the 20 years of MTN in Zambia, her story, a legend, because she's a lawyer, a leader by nature, and passionate about corporate services, CSR, and really bringing CSR strategies to MTN and bringing delight and passion to the table for so many Zambians and making a huge difference. So I'm really excited. I wore yellow for the very reason, celebrating 20 years as well. But welcome and good morning.
Good morning. It's really great to be here.
Yeah.
And yeah, let's talk about my journey. It's amazing to hear you just define me.
Yeah.
It really felt really good. So thanks a lot.
No, and that definition, nice that definition about you are at a junction of being a lawyer and being passionate about CSR and being in that world. I need you to tell me about that journey. How did that happen?
It's really, I never planned it.
Right.
I think like everybody says, our journey is, there's the plan and then there are the detours around the plan.
Yeah.
So my career really started as a media person.
Okay.
So I did mass communication and PR at UNSA. So with the mass comm, I did some PR
work. So you're Zambian?
Definitely Zambian.
Let's get to this. Are you Zambian?
100% Zambian.
Fantastic. Because the PO threw me off and I'm like, Pamela is...
No, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I always say women are privileged to get an additional name.
Yes.
So that was one of my additional names. So by marriage, I got the PO name.
Yeah.
So I'm Pamela Chizoni Pio.
Okay.
So my maiden name is Chizoni. And with that, I actually have 2 degrees from UNSA.
Mm-hmm.
And so my first leg straight from school, I really wanted to do media work. And the plan was I was going to be on television. I was seeing myself
doing it
for the BBC.
Yeah, you look
doing
it.
A reporter there. And along the line, I think at the time we only had ZNBC as a television broadcasting station.
Yes.
I did do some radio work when I was working with a quasi-government institution called CUSA. And I was really privileged because straight from uni, I was already working. So
right.
My four years at school, I had a job as a PR officer.
Okay.
So I got that done.
And I used to call them PR officers those
days.
Yes,
they were.
Yeah.
Literally PR officers.
Yes.
And so in the process, I kind of had a bit of a change in mind. And decided to apply for work at an NGO called YWCA.
Mm-hmm.
And joining YWCA was one of the most defining moments of my career, mm-hmm. I could say. It was the basis of changing it. And having joined YWCA, I applied for a job as a communications officer.
Yes.
They offered me a higher role as deputy executive director. Overwhelming.
Yes.
I was only 23, turning 24. Mm-hmm. I just had my son and I was thinking, how do I get this done? The amazing part, or is it amazing and as well as challenging for me, was the fact that I had to supervise grown-up people. And this is like my auntie. One of my aunties was working for YWC at the time. And I remember her coming to meet me and she goes, Pamela, well, not Jonathan, that's Tonga for Jonathan's daughter. How do I report to you? And we had this joke, we laughed about it, but I also knew I was straight from uni, but very enthusiastic and passionate.
But what did that teach you in terms of working with older people and managing people? What did it teach you?
It taught me a lot.
Mm.
I realized you have to gain people's confidence.
Yes.
And really, it's how do you navigate this? Mm. First, they think you're young.
Yes.
What do you know? I'll share an experience that we had. So while working at YWCA, the main focus was women empowerment. And you know, with Young Women's Christian Association, it's about women.
Mm.
It being a Christian organization, we had just managed the first big donor funding I managed to get with a colleague of mine was from DFID. And the main focus at the time was just around election time. How do we get more women into decision-making processes? and leadership roles. Mm. So I always have this passion about women, children, and people with disabilities. That's one of my passions. So with that bit, with the particular funding, we had to train some councillors, some members of parliament, as well as political party female leaders. We had the first training in the southern part of the country, and we had it in Livingston. So we call all these women, and you know, the women who were in politics at the time were our mothers. Right. Some of them are grandmothers.
Yes.
So we have this session there, and it being a Christian organization, would always start every meeting with a prayer. So a person volunteers to pray. We said, can anyone volunteer? One of the, I won't mention her name, one of the MPs says a prayer. And she prayed in Lozi. I don't understand Lozi very well. Mm-hmm. So we just said, amen, and thank you for the prayer, ready to get started. And she saw somebody in the crowd, they all burst into laughter. And so we kind of thought like, oh, wow, that was a great prayer. And so somebody just says, did you know what she said? So we looked at each other with Mahongo, who we're doing the training with. We say, no, but we've just assumed when you pray, it's nice things. Then they laughed again and said, she actually said, God help us. We're being taught by these babies and children who don't know anything. You're never trained for that.
No.
School doesn't tell you that. Your parents never tell you people will doubt your confidence.
In public as well.
And it's in public. It's a big crowd. We had close to 35, 40 people. And everyone was quiet, waiting for our response. And at that moment, we just said, you know what? We thank God that you actually prayed for divine intervention. This will make the training session go well. So with that, let's see how it goes. And let us know at the end of the day if we're able to deliver.
And how did it go?
It was amazing.
And you gained respect.
The respect was instantly earned. And after that, we're just like, wow, your babies can teach us things. We didn't know we could learn so much from you. And for me, that was one of the most defining moments, among several defining moments my career, that made me realize that at times you need to know your stuff. There is no other way to gain the confidence of people, especially when we're younger age, because then that speaks for itself. And once they get to realize you know what you're talking about and you're carrying them through this journey, and they'll definitely support you.
And they trust you.
They will trust you.
It's a lot about trust. I've been in that position many times as well.
Yeah,
so we're probably around the same age. When they started employing younger people, almost not weaving out the older people, but I've been in organizations where they were trying to make a transition in an organization. So they deliberately brought in young people. The resistance was incredible. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't talk to anyone before nine because everybody had to have their cup of tea.
Oh, yes, and bread. Yes.
So I had to just wait, but I had urgent things happening. I had to wait for them to eat.
Yeah.
With tea. No. Well, and still, yes.
Yes.
Yes. So I hear you on this, and I think when people gain your trust because they know what they're doing, they begin to walk with you.
Exactly.
And they're like, they get your advice, and then they start appreciating learning from a younger person.
Yeah.
I also learned a couple of tricks where before going into a meeting, I would have other meetings with them just to like, how do you think?
Exactly. Yes.
Managing
the meeting
managing
before
them.
The meeting.
The meeting before the meeting, yes. And they used to love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it also helps because they feel like they're being consulted.
It's exactly
because you're actually saying, can we do this? What do you think? Yeah. And they're like, excellent. So once you bring up the idea, it was like, it was their idea actually when it wasn't their idea, but they support you through the process. Yeah. So really that for me was defining.
Yes.
And having been at YWCA, so I can finish my journey. Having been at YWCA was the point that made me go into law.
Yeah.
All right. So I remember working late one of the evenings. And in those days, you'll remember, the kids won't get it. We had the big desktops. You had your UPS. You had, you know,
there's nothing like I'm going to finish this at home. No. There's nothing like I'll do this on the phone.
You had to work late.
And you had to be there.
And we had to be there. So we were working late. There was a project we're doing and we had to work late. And I recall around just before 8 o'clock, a woman comes running, banging on the office door. We rush to see her. And this woman has blood all over her dress. She's got a baby on her back and has got two children that she's carrying with her. And she just says, I need somewhere to stay. So as YWCA, they had a shelter for battered women and they still have it.
Yes, they
do. And they're running the drop-in center. So immediately we had to help this woman and be able to assist her, to process her through, give her clothes to clean up. But at that moment, I always knew I would champion causes for women. Because up to this day, this is close to 25 years ago, I can still see this woman and her children vividly. Mainly because people have nowhere to go. So there's that voice that needs to come in. And while working at YWC, we were championing a number of causes, which also meant around legal reforms. So indirectly, I got this interest into law and moved slightly away from the comms, but was more focused on law and admin. How do we ensure we empower women and children? Because also you had the girl children who were being sexually abused. And we started running the first drop-in center for children as well. So for me, I think that was the point. And my other jobs also being working for the Swedish Embassy as a programs officer, then I moved into international development. I did lots of work also with the government, the Ministry of Justice. It was the first time they did actually reports on conventions. And we worked with the then Honorable Minister Vincent Malambo at the time, State Council. So there was a lot of revolutionary things we were doing within the legal framework. Yes. So it was really time changing. But also at that point, I just said, I need to get my law degree.
So where did you do it?
I did it at UNSA. And trust me, I was working a full-time job. That's an 8 to 5. I was a mother and I had a husband. And so I was in class for 5 years straight. Every 5 o'clock to 8 on a daily basis, I had to study. So it was very changing, and determination was the biggest.
But when you look back on it, do you think, how did I do it?
I always wonder. So I'll tell you, I was pregnant in my 4th year. I did my classes, had my baby, that's the Pamela you're seeing. And 5 days after delivery, a C-section, I was writing my exams. I remember the school of the dean at the time of law school just said, what are you doing? Where's the baby? Who's with the baby? I said, the baby's with the father and I'm finishing school with my class.
Oh my God.
So really, it was very pivotal for me.
Yes.
But it's also seen me grow.
Yes.
And it's a sign. I always feel like if you're really determined, nothing gets through.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering if we see that today, if there are people who have that determination, especially the younger generation, do they have the appetite? Do they have the energy? Yeah. Do they have the drive? Exactly. I hope they do.
But I pray so too.
I don't know. But that's an incredible story.
Yeah.
So you really landed in the hands of CSR strategy, planning and driving at MTN. I want to hear how you joined MTN.
It's really one of those, I've been in mining. So I've got 13 years experience in the mining sector.
Mining as well?
Yes.
How?
So in between, there was a bit of a spin around. So got into mining. So with the mining part, I worked for a law firm. So once I had to quit my job at the embassy because I wanted to do my ziale.
Right.
And they couldn't take me on. I couldn't do it both ways.
Yeah.
So the decision was to quit a good paying job, well-traveled, everything else, to have no pay and do a year of ziale, which is stressful and everything else.
Even up till today is traumatizing.
It is. I actually tell people, even if you offered me $100 or $1 million, I wouldn't go back to Ziale. It's a nightmare.
And I'm sure you just did it once and that was it.
I had to do it twice. I did a reset, but that was it. So this is now almost 20 years back. I did it. So with that, I went into private practice. Then I had clients who were mining, and I became in-house counsel.
Okay.
So that sent me into the mining space sector. A very exciting place to be in as well. And I've done exploration work. I've done hardcore mining. So
did you have to move to the Copper Belt?
I was really privileged in lots of ways. I had to work for a mining company in the Northwestern province. That's Barrick Lumwana Mine. And at the time, my kids were still small. I wasn't ready to move.
Mm.
Mainly because my husband had just died.
Right.
And I felt relocating would be really uprooting my children from things they know best. It was just too much change. So initially I turned the job down. They came back 3 months later and said, we failed to find a person. We can meet you halfway. So I would spend 3 weeks in Lusaka and 1 week on the mine site in a month. And that was perfect.
Oh.
And at times would be slightly more if there were things happening, which was okay because then was flexible. I didn't have to uproot my children.
Sure.
So that really worked well. So with that mining sector, it's an amazing space to be in. But then 13 years in a sector, you start feeling like I need something new. I can do this now, almost with my eyes closed. Like I know the drill. So you're doing your regulatory work, you're doing your legal work.
Were you also doing communications?
A little bit of comms as well, yeah. Because then we had
a country
manager. They do.
Yeah.
So I was privileged, and I tell people in lots of ways, I pray for that, and it does happen. So I got to do part of the comms, and I told them when they were recruiting me at the interview, I said, I want to do 80% legal and regulatory work. The 20 can cover my comms and CSI.
Yes.
And I got exactly that.
Yeah. Which so is what you're also doing.
And the CSI, which is what I'm doing at
now.
MTN.
Yeah.
So now, then trying to find a new sector, move to MTN. And
how old was MTN then?
MTN then was 15 years.
Okay.
So I've been 5 years with MTN.
This
is my fifth year.
Okay.
And moved to MTN, an amazing place. Not just amazing because I'm there, but really it is so fast paced.
Of course.
It's you're like constantly doing this, literally. And I tell people, I thought mining was hectic. It's got nothing on telecoms.
No, telecoms is look, I've also worked in the telecom business and it's so competitive.
Yes.
Down to the last cent is what you're working for and at and chasing, down to the last client numbers. It's all about numbers. It's a number game.
It is. So I'll share an experience. When I joined MTN, the first 3 months were so hectic. Not so much hectic that I had a lot of work to do and to catch up. Because remember, I'm coming from a sector where I really didn't understand the telecom world. So it was like a lot of relearning and learning what it is and how it moves around. But my second week at MTN, we had an arson attempt on the building. It was crazy. And I remember I was like, so I walked in as one of the early senior exco members who had arrived at the office, was like, what do we do? What do you tell people? And one of my colleagues, Comba, always jokes about how Pam, with your heels, were all over giving people instructions. Because I kind of just fell into default. We need to do something. I will not wait for people who know what should happen and got it done. We got people sorted out. They need to move. Called my CEO. This is what's happening. We had a plan. And that really worked. So while we're sorting out all of that.
Was that kind of your baptism?
It was. It was literally thrown in the deep end. And I actually say, I think I actually swam through this ocean. I think 10 days later, we had like a huge fraud. Hit into it. And then again was the runarounds. So I always ask the team, like, do you always have something crazy happening? Drama every week or every other week. And I felt that was part of it. I always say, like, when you have your interviews, you say how I can handle any crisis. Once you put to the test, it's a whole different thing.
The thing is also with a crisis, you can't, well, that's why it's a crisis, because you don't see it coming.
No.
There are different types of crises.
Yeah.
And how you treat each one is totally different. And there's no book that tells you how to handle it.
Not even the policies, because you're like, what did the policy
no.
say? You do not have time to start referring to it.
Yeah.
You've got to move with it and get going.
Yeah.
And so that was part of the whole learning curve that I had with MTN. So it was quite a lot of things. We had a lot going on that year I joined, but I survived it all. But not only that, the good support system is the most critical thing. An excellent executive team that is there, an excellent CEO always carries you through the process. And we also have an excellent support team from our MTN group office. So they're always there to carry you through a process. So I think that just made my journey a lot more exciting. I'm a person who loves adrenaline sport.
I could tell.
So I would like, do that bungee jump. I would do the skydiving. And I was like, guys, I don't even need to do my adrenaline stuff anymore.
It's here
every day I go through it.
So then do you find, loving that, loving to hear that. Do you find that every day is not the same? Because those are the jobs that are really exciting.
It is.
You can't
every
go in as
every day is different.
You've got your things to do. I think those days are gone, especially in your industry.
Yeah.
Because you just don't know what's coming.
Yeah. And no matter how you plan for it,
I know. You
actually probably only do less than 10 or 5% of what you had done. It's always something else.
Yeah.
You get an urgent meeting, you need to go and see the minister, you've got this, a crisis has happened, we need to make an intervention. So I always describe myself as the fixer.
Love that. We love that.
So I'm always like, yeah, I'm the fixer when I
get it done.
Myself.
Pam will
so
get it done.
So whoever messes up, I'm there to pick up the pieces yeah. and get it sorted.
Look, it sounds like it's an amazing family. We had Komba here a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
We had fun. We had a really great conversation. Really it was good. Really good.
Yeah.
And I get the feel from all of you that you're just so passionate about your, about being at MTN. It's like it's a family. You know, whether it, like you say, whether you're getting support from, you know, from head office or group, but it mm-hmm. feels like everyone's driving in the same direction.
Yeah.
The energy, do you guys have a gym in there? Because you guys have so much energy. When Komba came here, the room was shaking. I'm like, wow.
No, that's the MTN we have.
Yeah.
It's a place where you really need to be bold yeah. as a person. But not only bold, but very agile because of the different changes that come through. Things are constantly happening. But also what we have greatest is the can-do spirit.
Mm.
And yeah. I think of what several places, you never really feel it as much as I've felt it at MTN.
Do you feel empowered?
Very empowered. You're empowered to make choices, make decisions, but also make the suggestions.
Mm.
And I think also if it's not taken up, you don't feel crushed.
Right.
Because you know you will still have something else to contribute to the process. So it's actually being part of this family. And I think it's like the families we have at home. If you come from a good family where you're pretty close, I come from a very close family. I feel the same at the office because you're literally walking around and you're like, guys, can we do this?
Yeah.
And there's and always somebody listen. Who will people listen and support the initiative. Yeah.
But with all that drive, energy, and actually I don't know many organizations that still really that have that because it's very difficult to keep a team going
yeah.
And a team for 20 years, eh?
Exactly.
Yeah. But there must be a lot of, there's empathy and there's compassion with all of that. Because mm-hmm. when I look at all the work that MTN's doing in terms of CSR,
yeah.
it's amazing. And 20 years of that. So tell me where that, what the direction is for that and why are they doing that? Because you know what? A lot of organizations do it because they have to. We have to show we're doing things.
Yeah.
Is it real?
It's very real. For me, I went through it and I was just like, wow, amazing stuff. Because not only do you have a chance to actually suggest the projects we do or programs we contribute to, we also get all the stuff involved. So I'll talk about our Yellow Care, which is the biggest thing that we do all the operations within MTN. And Yellow Care is focused on being a volunteer program where all staff contribute. And you start from the planning stage way before you get to the 21 days of Yellow Care itself, which is 1st June to the 21st June. You actually start with a process where staff members contribute to ideas of what projects you can have. We always get a theme. This year's theme was down to the grassroots, back to the basics, connecting with the grassroots. And for us to be able to go down and connect down there, it actually meant staff making the suggestions. What can we do?
So what did it look like?
Oh, it looked excellent.
Yeah. What did you do?
We focused on, as MTN, because we're looking at aspects around ICT, and digital transformation, that mm-hmm. was really it. We launched Yellow Care in Calabo. We drove close to over 700 kilometers to get there. The road is bad. And the community we went to is also out of Calabo town. We got stuck in the sand, so we had to use an ox cart at some point, but it was just exciting. And I remember one of my team members asked me, like, Boss Pam, why? Why here? Why do Yellow Care this far? Because at that point, we didn't have the right cars to drive in the sand. And there's also a certain technique you use when you're driving in the sand.
Yes, yes.
So if you don't know that, you're literally, at some point, the car was just digging itself.
Yeah, yeah.
And those were the questions, like, did we really have to
Why?
Come here? And for me, it was, we are connecting at the root. And where are the roots? It's back to the people who are forgotten.
Mm.
And we went back there for lots of reasons. Because one, this was a partnership we had with Oxfam. Okay. They had approached us and they mentioned they're doing a project there. And these are people who are beneficiaries of the social cash transfer. Mm-hmm. But the shocking thing is they don't have phones. It's very basic. They don't have phones. They receive the social cash transfer money via mobile money.
Okay.
So we're using Momo for them to get the money. And when they shared the story, I was just like, we are coming. We are going to be in Calabo. We'll follow the women and the men. And this is because they don't have the level of poverty means even if they get that social cash transfer payment, they will not use the money to buy even a small, simple feature phone because the needs are more. Mm. They were hit by the drought.
Mm.
So food is really a problem for them. So what they do is they have a SIM card, which they keep safely at home. And there's someone within the village who actually almost hires out the
phone.
So it's rent a phone. They use it for a short period of time. Put in your SIM card, do your transaction, get your money, remove it, pay this guy something. And then the next person does that. And for me, it was just in 2025, should we really have people who do not have an opportunity to be digitally connected?
Mm.
And that's the reality of the community we're living in. That's the reality of the Zambia that we have. So being able to do this, and there was one of the elderly women who was, because a lot of them, we focus on the most vulnerable people, the elderly women, elderly men, people with disabilities. She was so overwhelmed with joy and tears that she can actually own a phone.
So you,
and this is a smartphone.
So you went there.
We went there.
As a team. And what did you do when you got there?
So we went there, got there. So apart from just being able to give out the phones, we had partnered also with teledoctors.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to talk about health issues and give them an option to be able to, if you need a doctor, you could use your gadget and consult a doctor. We're able to, at the same time, talk about entrepreneurship because we do recognize that as people get the money, you can still make good use of it, not just for you to just eat and meet your basic needs, maybe invest a little bit into a small business. So our team were able to talk about entrepreneurship and how they can be able to grow this money. We also did focus on issues around fraud because we did recognize that with them having access to financial inclusion, automatically they become targets.
So they need financial, education.
Exactly. So a lot of financial education, financial literacy was given to them. And we also used, one of my other passionate projects is around child online safety. So we've been championing this as MTN.
Mm.
And we call it a Help Children Be Children campaign. We also want to ensure that children remain safe as they use online services and as they have their gadgets.
Yeah.
And because we had we're doing the program at a school football ground, we had school children come through. And that was also an opportunity to just teach them on what they should do. Obviously, they will be the ones helping out the parents on how to navigate a phone. But they had to also know that you've got to use the phone and be safe online as well.
There's no us without you, so we say thank you.
One of the things that I know an organization faced was, this is talking about children and how if the parent is uneducated, they used to give the child the phone to do like the transactions.
Yeah.
But the children were stealing from the parents. Oh, so they'd come to the bank.
Yes, and complain.
Like, someone's taken money. We're like, who did you share your PIN with? No one. It can't be my son.
Yeah.
We're like, let's, you know, even at the ATM.
And you can, that's true.
Yeah, there was a lot of that where they would use children because they weren't financially, they weren't educated, even financially illiterate.
Yeah.
Even at the ATM, they'll take their child to do that and the child would like then go
back and get more money. Yes.
Go back to the ATM. I mean, it wasn't really funny, but to happen.
Yeah.
But I think those things are going away now. And obviously you guys are doing a really great job
education. So in addition to that, we had to do a lot of digital education as well.
Yeah.
We see they need to just give them the basics.
Yeah.
And it's reminding people you can do more with your phone.
Absolutely.
It's not just your WhatsApp that's on it. It's also the fact that you can keep your records. You can be able, even for those running a small business, you can actually keep your records on the phone.
Yes.
So it's trying to help them to realize that a phone is more than just making a call.
Yes.
Or just being able to receive your text messages or receive messages on WhatsApp, but that you can actually use it as your little computer that can be able to store your records and do amazing things.
So really, over time, and from what you're telling me, MTN has been so, so impactful. For so many people on so many different levels. Mm. It's obviously something you're going to continue doing.
Yeah.
I wasn't there for your 20-year party or event.
No, we're still partying.
You're still partying?
Still partying. Okay. There's still a big party.
Everyone that comes here, don't forget me.
We will not forget you. You will definitely be there.
Need to be there.
Yeah.
Where do you see this going in the future? Just continuing on the same path or growing it?
So I think we, even as a business, we've been having our ambition 2025. Mm-hmm. So this is the year that it's ending. We are continuing with beyond 2025. So really part of our focus is we're doing bigger and greater things. So our focus will still remain on issues apart from the usual commercial side. So aspects of digital transformation are critical to what we do as MTN. Issues on financial inclusion will always be at the center of what we do. We recognize the value our customers have, but also how transformational it is. I'll share something, a little story. I love telling stories. So I'll tell another story. The Minister of Technology had asked us to partner with him to launch a site we had set up in one of the rural areas. So this is in Northwestern Province. And so in Northwestern Province, we got there with my CEO with about, let's get going, go and see what's happening. So we were going to launch. So this is really a rural site. And we had upgraded from 2G to 3G and 4G. So obviously people don't get the G's and everything else. Like, what does that mean? It's really from a point of just receiving a call, you're not being able to actually have access to have WhatsApp, your internet connectivity, you can have your data when it moves to that end. Mm. So it was an exciting thing. It just says, look, we've got to go now. So we traveled and it's in the outskirts. So this for me is one of the most memorable stories I can ever tell about my work at MTN. So we get there. And the minister had another engagement earlier on. So he went to do that and was going to come back. We get to the site. We've got our champs. You know, the usual, we're branding. It's yellow. We've got everything going on. And I don't have a crowd. So we're calling with the protocol officer. She's like, Pam. I was like, where are you guys? They're like, don't worry. We'll be there like in the next 30, 40 minutes. But do we have a crowd there? And I'm like, oh, we'll work it out. And really, I had children. And you know, not children like 10s or 11-year-olds. I had like kids like 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds.
As the crowd.
As the crowd. And I'm in a panic. My CEO's like, Pam, relax. Like, don't worry. I said, the minister can't come to officiate at a site with 3-year-olds. Babies. I say, these are the things everyone laughs at. We can't do that. So I send our champs like, guys, go out. Let's call people in the community to come. We try and play loud music. I started walking around because then they were not bringing me the numbers. And I'm now literally walking myself, like the villagers. Can you please come and join us? What's happening? I said, we're actually launching. We've upgraded your site from 2G to 3G and 4G.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And it was like, what does that
go
mean?
Off? Oh. So I see a group of women, and definitely there was a church group women, and we're going to a church, I think a church activity. It was on a Friday. And I said, look, you know what? Can you please come and join us? Help me get people to come through. We've upgraded your site, and you know, from 2G, we're having 3G to 4G. They're like, okay, so FHG fuel. And it basically means, what does that mean to me? That was the most pivotal moment for me, because I realized we speak this jargon. The ordinary person doesn't really care what I'm saying about 3G, 4G, or 5G.
I just want to make my calls. I just want to be able
exactly.
to.
Exactly. So I told the ladies, I said, do you know what this means? And I was using the local language, because a lot of them, they are around Lamba. But I used Bemba, and I said, you'll be able to make a video call and call your children in town, urban areas, and see them and also show them what's going on. I made a call to my son. I said, can you say I can see him? And I'm saying, you can show them the field. There's a field of maize just there. I said, show them how the field of maize is looking. So if you need fertilizer, if you need money for weed killer, they can see what's going on and they'll send you the money. When they heard that, that was it.
The crowd moved.
I had a crowd. My CEO always says, Pam, I was in the car. He was doing a bit of work. He says, 10 minutes later, I'm shocked. We've got a crowd. We had people we couldn't even explain it to. And he says, what did you do? You're in the wrong career, Pam. You should be a politician, because I don't know how you could get people to come within 10 minutes. So the story is, by the time the minister came, that area in Mushindano was packed with people. The women group, because they realized the importance. Trust me, I had a choir. We didn't have a choir to sing. They sang to greet the minister, and they didn't know that was all part of it. It looked like we had planned it so well. They were singing to welcome him and the different delegates. As we're making him sit, they kept on singing. They sang the national anthem in local language. They were there the whole time. And I had this crowd, and I thought, as MTN, we believe everyone deserves the benefits of a modern connected life.
Mm.
And it's people in those communities seeing how they can benefit from this connected life. And there's no other story. I always get goosebumps when I'm telling it. There's no other story that I can say so well, because that to me spoke a lot of words. When people know how they can be able to benefit from being digitally connected, they will walk with you the whole journey.
You've got so many, obviously got so many goosebump moments at MTN. And I think I can see it in your face. Yeah. I can hear it in your voice. And it's really, really awesome. Tell me goosebump moments in your personal life.
Mm.
Let's go back. Tell me a little bit about your family. Mm. You seem to come from a close family.
Yeah.
Were you Lusaka based?
No, we actually grew up in Kabwe.
Right. I was in Kabwe last week on Saturday.
Oh, really? It's
I haven't been there for about 10 years. Okay, look, I was traumatized, okay?
I agree with you.
I just didn't know what was going on.
I agree with you.
I know they're doing the road, but when you get to that central part, we used to go...
It breaks my heart. I literally, we laugh with my friends who grew up in Kabwe, just like it just breaks our heart. The streets were clean and nice. You could walk through.
It felt like a huge market.
Yes. It's like we went back, and it's like a time capsule went back in time.
Yeah, it felt like a...
And that was it. But I grew up there, went to the convent school, so was at a girls' school. And
how many of you are you?
There's six of us. So we lost my other sister last year, but there were six of us, and we've only got one brother.
Okay.
So I come from that home, and I'm the first child. And so being the first child automatically means you become like the deputy or assistant mom.
Deputy.
I always felt like I was the deputy mom, because I tell all my siblings, I literally took care of you. And you are responsible for cooking. The house had to be clean. Whoever broke and messed up, whatever you were bitten for having had
on their behalf.
Exactly. I'm like, I didn't break it. And like, you were the older one. You should have controlled your siblings. And you're thinking, how do I control my siblings? But that's really the environment I grew in. Mm. So it's really, we're very close-knit. Even now with my siblings, we're practically inseparable. My mom and dad brought us all together so well.
Mm.
I always feel the two of them are my idols for different reasons. My dad was very professional, worked as a civil servant, so worked through that line. But also, the story I always tell people is how he made me read leadership books at the age of 13 and 14. I couldn't understand one thing from the other. But he always did that. So he inspired me a lot in my leadership journey.
Mm.
I remember reading See You at the Top by Zig Ziglar, and he would take you through the process and why it's important and explain some of the things, but I only got to appreciate it as I grew older. Like, that was what Dad was talking about.
Yeah.
So it was always my go-to. So my dad passed away, it's almost 8 years now, and my mom is phenomenal for different reasons.
Yeah.
She gave up working to be a stay-at-home mom. And when I was young, I never understood it. I was just like, who does that? Because I was always going to be a career woman. I was set I was going to be that. I wasn't going to be like my mom. But also now I look back, we came back home from school. There was always mom there, and she was doing something. But she never just sat home as a stay-at-home mom. My mom is very entrepreneurial. And she was constantly running one business from the other. And as I grew older, I realized mom made more money than my dad did. Because my dad was a civil servant.
Yes.
So it was really very basic pay. When he traveled, was great. But mom with her businesses, and she was always running multiple businesses.
And she'd try different things and never give up. And
they brought her more income.
Yes.
So now I look back, because like, she's a very smart woman.
Leadership.
Exactly.
In a different cover.
Very different way. And I feel with both of them,
they
have taught me to who I am today. And I really appreciate mom and dad for that. And also just the confidence.
Yes.
It's one of those things you never get anywhere. I'm tall. My dad is tall. My mom is short. And there was a point when I started stooping, because I grew taller than my friends at that age. And my mom bought me high heels. So I still wear very high heels. She bought me the heels and said, you will wear the heels, you're tall, and you will walk straight. And it was very funny, because at that moment, I actually felt like I wanted to shrink away. And she told me, you don't shrink, you stay up. And I think since then, I'm this person.
So would that have been the point where you picked up your leadership skills or realized, when did you realize that I can do this and I am a leader? Because whether you like it or not, obviously you had those skills. Maybe they were hidden somewhere, but you're like, whether I like it or not, I'm a leader and I can do this and this is who I am.
To be really honest, it took me a while to get it.
Yeah.
Because indirectly, I'd always get to lead causes without realizing I'm actually doing the leading.
Mm.
And it was one of the moments when my dad said, you are a leader and be proud of it.
Yes.
And that was it, that it actually rang, that I can actually galvanize people to do things and will get things done.
Yeah.
So I think it was way in my just before I was turning 20. So it was just when I was in uni and getting things done. I had my first job. And actually, that was the point of saying, you can be a leader. So at the office, be proud. And I mean, that was my dad. You shake people with a firm hand. You look in the eyes. If you've got something to say, do not be shy to say it. Say it and always volunteer to do something. And since then, I've always done that.
What would your friends say about you?
Whoa.
Are you like the bully in the group?
Well, I don't think I'm the bully, but most outspoken and very opinionated.
Or like we're deciding to go somewhere. Who makes a decision? Like talking is all the... Who's like the...
I probably will have a huge say on it. I probably will have a huge say on where we're going. So I will do that.
Yeah.
Sometimes a bit more cautiously, like, you know, maybe. Then let's just go.
They know you. They know you.
Then go back into it. Yeah, yeah. It's really part of it.
They know you. Yeah. Tell me about your own children, your family. Tell me that story.
So the biggest thing, I'll try and say something that was very pivotal in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I rarely share this, and I'm debating whether I should. But anyway, I will say it.
I want to hear it.
I suppose this is unfiltered, right?
It's unfiltered.
It's unfiltered. So I had married, had two children at the time. And my late husband, Eddie, he was very spontaneous in a lot of things. He's the kind that was very affectionate. So I was working at the Swedish embassy and we would work half day on a Friday.
They still do?
Yes. So I miss that. That's the bit I miss about working in those places. But then he comes and just says, you know what, Pam, I booked you for, and this is like in the late 90s, about around 90s, yeah, but early 2000. And he just says, you know what, it's not my birthday. There's nothing wrong that he's done. It's not an anniversary. He says, I booked you at the spa. You're going to have everything treated. And in the early days, there were very few spas in Lusaka. Yeah. And I go in, have my manicure, have my pedicure, have my massage. And when I was having my massage, I kind of just thought, I'm so lucky. I got my pigeon pair, so I've got my daughter and my son, and I've got a loving husband. This is the life. That was on a Friday. On the Tuesday, the following week, Monday was okay. On Tuesday, my daughter got sick. And she got sick on Monday night. She died the next day. Like literally within 24 hours. So she was sick. There was that pivotal moment. And it changed me a lot.
Mm.
Okay. So she got sick. I think for a good half a year, I wasn't sure where I was going and where I was coming because I was so traumatized. I didn't see it. So she got sick. It was just a fever and she'd been well. She'd gone to school. She was 2 years, 4 months old. She'd gone to school and I said, you know what? Tuesday morning, she's not going to go to school. We'll keep her home. Let's monitor her temperature. And my maid was like, okay, madam, we'll do that. But she looks okay. She was always very bubbly and busy. She's calling me at lunchtime and saying the baby's fever has gone so high, come. I'm rushing home, taking her to the hospital. She's convulging as we're entering the doctors.
Mm.
And that was it, really. But the reason I'm sharing this, and I really share it, is it taught me that life is never given. Our plans are never constant. They always will change. And there's this divine thing that we don't have control over. So for me, that moment changed me because I learned to appreciate the smaller things. I realized that I don't have control of my life. It's God that controls it. That's one. But two, how do I leave it? How do I ensure I make this difference? Because I will not have these kids grow until I'm older to make a difference in life. So that was really part of what changed me.
Mm.
And it changed us as a family as well, because then it just means you do a lot of things together, very deliberate things. Your unity, your time together, you actually plan a lot more things than you did, because the rest is like you're always busy, you're working. And that has been something that has held me on. So yes, I'll do that adrenaline crazy stuff because I'm just like, I don't know how much time I have. And tell people we care about that, we love them. But also help the people that need the help, because I know I made a difference in someone's life, even if I don't know them. So that was part of the very pivotal changing point for me. My son is all grown up now, and we had another daughter after that, and that's Pam, my named after me. And so my son did law, my daughter has done just graduate, finishing her mechanical engineering, and also just have a very close family. So my siblings are always there. I've got friends I grew up with as a child still there, the newer friends I've met over time. But I think for me, that is really the family. So with that, it meant there are a lot of things I'll do very deliberate about because of that experience I had then.
And so you'll deliberately be spontaneous.
Very, very.
You'll deliberately love. You'll deliberately tell you, I love you.
Yes.
And I care. And you'll deliberately care.
Yeah. And I'll deliberately drop off flowers to somebody because I just, there's nothing, it's not, but I just want to do it and show them that I care. And because of that also, it made me, I feel like it made me a very different, strong person.
I'm sure.
I probably was strong all along, but it's just that it's just this different layer that it gives you to realize that, what else can I do? I've got this time in this world. How do I make it count? And for me, that's the greatest thing. How do I make it count and still have fun?
Yeah. Does religion play a key role in your family or closeness with your, in your life?
It does.
Right.
It does. Religion has always been there. I've grown from a very religious family. So that is always key and center in our home and with my parents. I was telling my daughter, she didn't know about this, that my mom didn't want me to be a lawyer. And well, at the time I wasn't thinking of being a lawyer. But when I was young, when there were different career options, she had just said, you know, lawyers are liars. They will do this. A Christian shouldn't do that. And in a sense, I kind of bumped off the law thing, but it came back in another way. But really, that has been something that holds us together as a family. And I think it's the aspect of gratitude that comes with it. But also for me, I might not be your... I'm not be the blessed in this, this. I'm
not on your face.
Staunch thing. But for me, Christianity is how we live.
Yes.
And it's me being able to spend a birthday, not having a party, but at UTH Pediatric Wing where they've got the cancer care children. And spend it with those children and make that difference. Get them the things that they need. And later be told, you know what? Yesterday I was actually praying that God should bring me. I think it was some of the ladies when we had gone there, because I actually spoke to the social worker and said, what do they need? So I had some personalized gifts for some of the patients that she had told me about. And I remember one of them coming back almost kunkulering on the floor. I think you know what that means in Bemba, like of on course. Her knees. Yeah. And I told her not to do that. She just says, you know what? It was just diapers that I took for her. And I took a lot of diapers. I think it was close to over 100 because her baby was going through chemo. And with the chemo was the running stomach. And her village is in somewhere way beyond Kasama. And there's no family members. She just says, I can't keep washing. The towel nappies are finished. I'm now cutting fabric like the chitengas to do it. And she just said, this is what I prayed for last night. And you answered my prayer. And at that moment for me, that's what Christianity is. It's me being able to be the conduit that answers a person's prayer, even if I didn't know what they prayed for. But because I felt like I needed to help them. And for me, that is, I rarely publish that stuff. I know a couple of my friends have said, Pam, sure, it's habits on your... I don't do that because I feel like I'm sharing it today.
Yeah.
But I always feel that this is something quite personal for people I help out. But it's that person who comes and just says, you did that. And a lot of them will come back and say, you know what? How did you know? This was what I was praying for last night. It's like God spoke to you. And I think for me, that's what Christianity is.
It also feels as though you have a fairly public life by virtue of what you do.
Yeah.
You're the public face.
Yes, yeah.
But have a very strong private...
private life. Private I try life. And do that as well.
So what do you do when you just need to have your space and your peace? Like you say, maybe you just have those moments where you want to appreciate. But what do you do? What do you do on a Sunday?
So probably my kids watch me because I'm like always cleaning and working around the house. So they'll probably say, Mom, no. One of the key things I do every day is my fitness.
Right.
So I need to exercise. And I'll work out in a gym or run on the road. So that is one.
Are we running APSA together?
Definitely we are.
I'm only doing 5Ks.
I'm doing 10.
I'll wait for you.
You have to wait for me so we can be able to get those pictures and the medals.
I'll wait for you.
So that is critical for me. That's one. I try and do a lot of reading. I'm not reading as much as I would want.
None of us are, I think.
And I'm
that's
very
deliberate as well. It has to be deliberate because of our lives.
It has to. I'm so old school. I can't do e-books.
I know. I like to flip.
So I just love the feel of a freshly bought book, that smell of the print.
The smell.
And yeah. With that smell, I'm just like, yes, I can turn the pages and enjoy it. So the time people laugh at me, I'm at the airport and I've got like I bought a bunch of books. Like, Pam, you can actually have e-books. But that's one of the things. So I try and read.
Yeah.
So not as much. So times, what I've told myself, even if it's a page, I'll kind of read or two. But that's one of the things I love to do. I love gardening. So there'll be lots of that.
Do you got green fingers?
I do.
You can't have everything, Pam.
Anything you give me will grow.
No.
Will definitely grow. My mom always laughs that we can get things together and somehow mine will survive. Honestly, one shoot, I will multiply.
My entire family have got green fingers. I don't know what happened. Then I just remind myself that, you know what?
You're blessed either way. Yeah.
Exactly. We all have our own talents. I'll go to the house and I'll be like, they're like, even if you take it and try and replant it.
That's one of my sisters. No matter what, she just says, guys, it will die. It will not survive.
No, we all have our own talents. So, you know.
So I well love done that. Yeah. So I love with that. And I think apart from that also is, at some point, I used to do a lot of sewing. And I can knit. I don't do it anymore. I think sometimes I feel like I should get back to it.
What's that basic one? I know everyone does that one.
The back stitch. So you've got the back stitch, the hem.
This one, then you... With the knitting?
With the crocheting and with the hook. Because you can do the crocheting, you can use with the hook when you do the crochet. You can do the knitting needles.
The knitting needles, that one. There's that and then
and
you?
And then you hook it around. Yes, yes.
Okay, I think I might remember that.
You might remember that.
Yeah.
So there's all part of that, but I don't do it anymore.
Yeah.
So I think now is just the time to relax and watch a good movie.
Yeah.
I think that just helps out. Sometimes I fall asleep midway.
Do you take leave?
Probably tired.
Do you take leave and say, I'm off? Or when you have, you're probably one of those people who, when you take leave, you have to leave the country.
Yes.
Yeah. Otherwise,
that's when it works.
That's what I know.
Or go to a place where there's no connectivity because then, yeah, it's not going to happen.
And you know, obviously I'm not somebody who'd be like, no, it's work. I can't later because no, it has to get done.
I literally go on holidays with my laptop because I'm always saying like, okay, the phone... I might need to do something serious, so I just carry it with me. So I will do that. I love fishing.
Really?
Yes.
I caught an
8-pound tiger fish in the lower Zambezi.
Well done.
That was last year.
Wow.
So
what is it about
that?
I don't understand
it's
fishing.
It's the peace. It's the peace. So. It's the time out. It's you and the water.
And then
and
sitting,
the sand and
then
everything
sitting
else.
And waiting.
Patience. That's the only time I'm very patient because I'm like, I need to catch the fish. Shh. So that's one of it. So when I get the chance to do that, that's something I really love to do. It calms me down and it's just a good time to reflect. Yeah.
Well, I can imagine when I see it visually, for me, it's the action of the
throat in and then,
it's
yes.
That part I can't get my head around. But being on the water, I totally
It's fantastic. I totally see that. Yeah. So that's really great. So I think all of that helps me and also just spending time with family.
Yes.
So I try and host a lot. Then I'm cooking. So then I'm like, da-da-da-da-da. But still, it's just good to have a full house and have family over and host them around and cook. I cook everything. So my late husband was an excellent cook. And he could cook everything, Portuguese, Spanish food. So there was no way I wasn't going to learn any few tricks from that.
Good for you.
Yeah. So that's part of it. Yeah.
Tell me, you've done 5 years at MTN. There's the whole journey of Pamela. Pam, what is it for yourself personally? What does that look like in 5 years' time? Your children will be done. Mm. You'll be talking to somebody, but they won't. They're not going to be there.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's very true. I still feel I've got lots to give out and be there. Currently, I feel... there's a lot of change that could come through as well.
Mm.
And change in the sense of being more impactful in the programs that we do. Can we reach out to more people being at MTN, even with our CSI activities? Can we have stronger relationships with the government, with our regulators that we work with? And I'll tell you one thing that I also love being at MTN. It's being able to champion certain legal reforms. And that is something I've seen throughout my career, but it's being able to do that. And we have been able to champion certain legal reforms that have impacted the telecom sector. So I see us as being able to be there for that public policy changes and also move the country to this more digital transformation agenda. We've got AI, we've got all those things happening. And I'm very sure our world 5 years from now will be very different.
What about your world? What about your
my
agenda?
World. Okay, my agenda. Am I sharing my agenda?
When Pam is no longer in the house.
When Pam is not at home and it's me, I still see myself doing me. Mm. I want to travel a lot more than I can. I'm doing currently. And I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to do it because I'm trying to put up a plan around it and do those longer travels, see the world. Mm. I love traveling the world and I've been privileged to do part of it quite a bit. But the places I haven't been to. So right now I'm like, I haven't been to South America. I think that's the only continent I haven't been to. And it's on my to-do list. Got to make it work and pay time and travel. So that's really something critical I would want to do. So it's about the travel. And if I'm not traveling from that perspective, I also see myself as doing a bit more learning because that's a constant that I have. I'm back into school and I've been debating on doing a PhD. So I probably have said it out there, but it's something in the books and it will get to happen. So there is something in the pipeline. Can I get to do that and have a bit more of school? But not just that, for me, just become more relaxed.
I want to see that. I really want to see that. So, Pamela, for me, this has been an absolute yellow privilege to have the conversation, but more of a Pamela more of a Pamela honor, actually. I haven't met you before. It was so great to meet you. And I will definitely see you on that finish line.
Definitely will. So thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
As we just talk about everything leaving. And I think it's just that, and MTN, we're everywhere you go.
Yes.
So be there to see us. But also, just to say, it's our 20th year. And I think when you hit such a pivotal year and milestone, lots of reflections. But the greatest thing is just to say thank you. We thank our customers, most critical, because without our customers, we wouldn't be there. Their loyalty, their trust. Mm. In being with us the past 20 years, for the good and the bad. We just want to thank the communities. And with the communities, we wouldn't be there without them. So they're really the most critical bit. When we talk about changing people's lives, it's the communities that we do it. And I think for me, that's critical. Our various stakeholders are also another bit. Our investors in the business is critical. But finally, the employees, the staff. You are the ones that make MTN tick. We've got this bold, energetic team, always on the go. It's the staff. And I just want to take this time to say thank you to everyone who's been with us through this journey. And it was super good to chat with you this morning.
Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your voice. And thank you for your heart. As MTN celebrates 20 years, thank you for everything that you do for them. And thank you for being the heart and the voice of the organization. So together, wishing MTN a great future and a very, very yellow future. Thank you, everybody, and have a yellow morning and a yellow day. There's no us without you, so we say thank you.